Tonight I want to tell you the story of David Brainerd. And the verse that I use tonight to begin is John 12 and verse 24. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Now, I use that verse, but that verse really has no direct connection to David Brainerd. No connection in that it was not his life verse. It was not the verse he claimed as his call to the ministry. As far as we know, there is no sermon that he preached from that verse that had great results. It wasn't used at his funeral. It is not engraved on his tombstone. But that verse probably more than any explains the impact of the life of David Brainerd. Because really the impact of his life came more in his death than it did in his life. He had a greater impact on missions and missionaries after he died, more so than when he lived. Now, one of the common themes that runs through the lives of all of these great missionaries is longevity. We tell the story of men who spent long years, many years on a hard field, but despite that, they never thought about quitting. Men who spent many years building and laboring and starting churches, and only when a broken body or death forced them to, only then did they quit. Last week, William Carey, 41 years in India without a furlough. Adoniram Judson, we looked at Adoniram Judson last year. He left for Burma at the age of 25. He would stay in Burma for 40 years. Wednesday night, we showed the video of Brother James Griggers in Austria, a missionary that we support, a great missionary. Brother Griggers has been a missionary since 1978. We support a man named Ted Mullins. Ted Mullins spent 28 and a half years in Papua New Guinea and finally had to come home because of health, and now he preaches out and preaches mission conferences. And so these are men who spend long years in the work of the Lord, but that is not the case with David Brainerd. The entire missionary ministry of David Brainerd lasted all of 4 years. He never traveled outside the United States. He wrote no books. There are no recorded sermons of his that I could find. He never married. He had no children. As far as we know, he was never a member of any kind of board or the president of a college or anything like that. He was kicked out of college. He never finished his degree. He was denied a license to preach in his home state. He was in poor health for the entire span of his ministry. He was a very lonely and depressed soul. And he died at age 29. And 300 years later, we still talk about him. And if you learn anything from the life of David Brainerd, you should learn that it is not how many years you live that count, it is how you live those years that count. Because there's many men who have lived a very long but empty life. God gave them many years, but they wasted all of those years in nothingness. So you can live a very long but passionless life. In your youth, in your young adult years, God is saying that I have given you strength and health. Make these years count for me. And then in your mature adult years, God is saying that you have your career and you have your family and you're established and you have some experience and wisdom under your belt. Now make these years count for me. In your older years, God is saying you have spent the best years building your fortune and you are settled into retirement. Now, make these years count for me. And a man can live all of his life hearing about missions and the great need and spend all of those years just in building the American dream and then fall on his knees and say, "Oh God, I wish that I could make a difference for you." You can right now. No matter where you are in life, but the passion of your life and my life has to be in line with the passion of God for the souls of men. David Brainerd was born in the house of Hezekiah Brainerd on April 20th, 1718 in Haddon, Connecticut. His father was a Connecticut politician. He served in the House of Representatives, and he was a justice of peace in their home county. And his father suddenly died at age 46. In fact, his father died during a session of the Connecticut House of Representatives, and he died during that. And David Brainerd was 9 years old when his dad died. History has recorded virtually nothing about his mother, Dorothy, except that she died when David Brainerd was 14, 5 years later. So at age 14, David Brainerd was left an orphan. He moved to live in with an older sister and her husband. They would raise him in his teen years. It was a very strict congregational family, Bible reading and prayer and going to church and rigid rules. At age 19, he inherited the family farm, and he moved there for about a year, and he tried farming. Farming really was not his thing. He was never a very healthy, strong, sturdy kind of guy. And so he was there for about a year and left the farm. And though he had religious training all of his life, and he lived a very, very strict home, and his grandfather was a preacher, David Brainerd didn't get saved until he was age 21. And you may remember Adoniram Judson, that Adoniram Judson left his religious trainings and became a rebel of sorts for several years, and God brought him back. That was never David Brainerd. David Brainerd, in his teen years, would spend long hours in prayer and meditation, read his Bible through twice a year before he got saved. He was somewhat of a mystic. But at 21, he laid aside mere religious exercises, and he trusted Christ as his Savior. When he got saved, David Brainerd had a desire to go into the ministry. And so he entered Yale College in 1739 to train for ministry. As a young man today that would want to train for the ministry, Yale University would be the last place I would send you. Now, maybe if you wanted to be a liberal, socialist, Democrat, I would send you there. But a preacher, no. But Yale College was founded in 1701 by preachers to be a training ground for preachers. That's how it was started. When David Brainerd got there, he was 21, which made him older than most of the other students, because back in that day, it was not uncommon for a young man to go to college at 13, 14, 15 years old. David Brainerd went when he was 21. He was there for less than a year, and he had to leave school because of sickness. In his first semester, he got measles, and he had to quit that semester. So the second year he came back, and the second year that he came back, he had to leave again because he had some kind of illness, or he was spitting up blood all the time. Brainerd would eventually die of tuberculosis. It was probably tuberculosis that he had in those college days. But in 1740, David Brainerd came back to college. And when he came back to college, the campus was really in the midst of a revival. If you know anything about the history of American revivalism, you've heard of the Great Awakening. Well, that was taking place in 1730, 1740. America was running really in the throes of that revival. And that revival has swept into Yale College, and students were experiencing a great move of God on that campus. Preachers like George Whitfield, Jonathan Edwards, Gilbert Tenney were coming in to preach, and they were having revival. But as much as the students were on fire for God, the faculty was not. And there was a great rift. In fact, it created such a conflict because you have overzealous students, and they are criticizing the spiritual fervor of their staid teachers. And so finally, the faculty got together. They passed a decree in 1741, and here's what it said. If any student of the college shall directly or indirectly say that the rector, either of the trustees or tutors, are hypocrites, carnal, or unconverted men, he shall for the first offense make a public confession in the hall, and for the second offense be expelled. You criticize the faculty and say, we're not spiritual, we're going to kick you out. In fact, on the very day that they passed that decree to the college, they invited a preacher in, hoping that he would kind of dampen the fires. They called the wrong guy. They called Jonathan Edwards. Jonathan Edwards came in and he preached, and he just fanned the flames. Well, David Brainerd was one of those students who was on fire for God. And anything that was not full of spiritual fervor was in his crosshairs. He had one teacher, and he said to that teacher, he has no more grace than a chair. Instead of another teacher, or of the rector, he said he should drop over dead for fining overzealous students. They had enough. They expelled him. They kicked him out. And that would be fine. But it just so happened that you had to have a college degree to pastor a church in Connecticut. They had just passed the law. And the law said that no minister can hold a position such as pastor who has not graduated from Yale or Harvard or a European school like Oxford or Cambridge or something like that. So you had to be college educated from a religious seminary in order to have a license to preach in his home state. He is kicked out of college. Now, this time the Great Awakening was in full force, but the Great Awakening really created a rift between two types of churches. There were some churches that were more moderate and more liberal in that standard. And they didn't really see the Great Awakening as a move of God because of what they called emotionalism. And then you had other churches who were very zealous. And they called them old lights and new lights. Old lights and new lights. Names that you would be familiar with, George Whitfield, Jonathan Edwards, they would be part of the New Light movement. They were conservative, they preached conviction, they preached conversion, a changed life, holy living. And because Yale and Harvard were going a more moderate way, then those New Light preachers, those conservative, those fiery preachers, then they started their own college to train their preachers, and today that's known as Princeton University. Well, those new lights, George Whitfield and Gilbert Tenney and James Davenport and men like that, they didn't need the approval of Congregational or Presbyterian Church. We don't need your approval. We'll preach anywhere. And since David Brainerd couldn't preach at a church in Connecticut, he began to preach in those new light churches in New England and New York. One of the preachers he became friends with was a man named James Davenport. James Davenport pastored a Presbyterian church in New Jersey, and he invited Brainerd to come up, and for two or three months, then David Brainerd preached with him, and Davenport just happened to be a member of the Society in Scotland for Propagating Christian Knowledge. What that was is that was a board back in the United Kingdom, a group of men that they had started to help spread Christian knowledge around the world. And what they would do is they would start a school or build a library or print books. They weren't a mission board, but they wanted to do things to propagate the gospel and to support missions. And one of their first mission fields was the British colonies in New England in America. James Davenport was the ambassador for them in the United States. Now, just as a side note, and this won't be on the quiz, so you don't have to remember this. James Davenport was a strange bird. James Davenport would hold revival meetings, and he would have what he called bonfires of vanity. And they would ask people to come at the end of the revival, and they would bring their books and anything you have that's carnal, and they would build a fire, and they would burn it in the bonfire of vanity. In fact, he had one such meeting, and it was such a success, and people came and they burnt their carnal books, and they didn't have tape back then, but whatever they had, they're burning the stuff and all this worldly stuff. And so he planned to do a bonfire vanity the next night, and this night he encouraged them to bring your luxury clothes, your expensive clothing, or just to sell out for God and just to show your full commitment to God and your fancy expensive clothing. And so they built the bonfire, and the story goes, I don't know if he got too close to the fire or he breathed in too much smoke, but he got a little bit too excited, and people are throwing in these expensive clothes, and James Davenport took his pants off and threw them in the fire. There was a woman standing next to him, and she reached in and she grabbed those pants out of the fire. And she said, "Preacher, put your pants off. Get a hold of yourself." And so he did. So James Davenport is not necessarily a guy that we would have a portrait hanging in a hallway. We probably wouldn't have him in for a revival meeting. But God used that very strange preacher to stir a missionary desire in the heart of David Brainerd. Yale College refused to reinstate him. He couldn't be licensed to preach in a regular church. So be a missionary somewhere where they would hear you. So on November 25th, 1742... David Brainerd was approved by that society to be a missionary to the Native Americans in New England. Now, nearly most of what we know about David Brainerd comes from his diary, and I'll talk about that in a minute. David Brainerd's journals. And in his journal, here's what he wrote. He said, "Here I am, Lord, send me. Send me to the ends of the earth. Send me to the rough, the savage pagans of the wilderness. Send me from all that is called comfort on earth. Send me even to death itself, if it be but in thy service and to promote thy kingdom." During his 4 years as a missionary, David Brainerd would evangelize missionaries in western Massachusetts, eastern New York, the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. And for most of that time, it was mostly hardship with very little fruit. He struggled trying to learn the native dialects. He was ill most of the time. The living conditions were often rugged and primitive. Even by that standard, there was a great distrust on the part of Indians and the white men because of the mistreatment they'd received. He says, "To an eye of reason, everything respecting the conversion of the heathen is as dark as midnight. Yet it cannot but hope in God for the accomplishment of something glorious among them." A 4-year ministry really doesn't leave a lot of material to talk about, but in the summer of 1745, he moved to work with the Delaware Indians in New Jersey, and God began to move. In the first year, he baptized 77 converts. There was one particular lady. She was the daughter of a notable chief. And her family had been horribly mistreated by white settlers. But she got saved listening to David Brainerd preach. And she would tell her children that David Brainerd was the first white person that she ever loved. One of her grandchildren later would write about her that she loved David Brainerd because he loved his Heavenly Father so much that he was willing to endure hardships, traveling over mountains, suffering hunger, lying on the ground, that he might do her people good. And that really became a turning point in David Brainerd's ministry. One of the stories that's told about David Brainerd is when he came to New Jersey to approach the Delaware Indians, and he had pitched his tent outside of their camp and getting ready to make that approach. And he had spent the night outside of their camps, and he was ready to approach them. The Indians had already seen him. And they had sent some braves to go and find out who this white person is and possibly to kill him. Great animosity between white settlers and Indians, and no distrust. And the Indians were prepared to kill him. And they got close to his tent, and they found this white man on his knees praying. And as they watched, the story says, they watched a rattlesnake that crawled up to David Brainerd and coiled, getting ready to strike while they prayed. For some reason, that rattlesnake just crawled away. And it convinced those Indians that the Great Spirit was with him. And that's how they started listening to him. Brainerd never owned anything of value or material wealth. In the several biographies that I have read of David Brainerd, there is no mention of how he was supported. I don't know if the society supported him. I don't know if other churches supported him, or if it was just a life of simple faith. I do know that he preached most of his sermons outside, that he preached in the rain and that he preached in the snow. Because he didn't have a home, he would often sleep in the woods, sometimes with no protection and no shelter. He either traveled on foot or horseback. He was often weak. He was prone to deep bouts of depression in his journals 22 times. He writes that he wishes that he could die. It's really strange about the home of David Brainerd that he came up in, and that it seemed that there was a strain of weakness. His dad died at 46. His mother died at 53. He had a brother, Nehemiah, that died at 32. He had a brother, Isaiah, that died at 23. He had a sister, Jerusha, that died at 34. So you can say that he didn't really come from good stock. There was nothing especially strong about his family. He was weak in body, and he suffered mostly throughout his ministry. He was a very melancholy type person. The kind of person that we think that God could use. In November 1746, David Brainerd became so ill that he couldn't continue preaching. And so he left and he traveled to the home of Jonathan Dickinson in Elizabethtown, New Jersey. Jonathan Dickinson, by the way, was a preacher who had supported him. Jonathan Dickinson would become the first president of Princeton University. Brainerd stayed there for about 4 months, hoping to regain his strength. In fact, during the 4 months that he was staying there, that's when a group of preachers got together and founded Princeton University, and the first classes were held in the home of Jonathan Dickinson. And an ironic twist of fate, The guy that they kicked out of college became one of the first students of Princeton University. On May 8, 1747, he traveled to the home of Jonathan Edwards in Northampton, Massachusetts. They were close friends. His body was weak from tuberculosis. He was in great pain. Jonathan Edwards had a 17-year-old daughter. Her name was Jerusha. And Jerusha decided that she would become his nurse and try to nurse him back to health. It's a rumored story that there was a romance between David Brainerd and Jerusha. But I don't believe that there was. I think that that's just a rumor. I think he was too sick. There's no indication anywhere that there was any kind of romance. And for several months, that 17-year-old daughter took care of David Brainerd. On October the 9th, 1747, David Brainerd died of tuberculosis at the age of 29. By the way, 4 months later, Jerusha died from contracting tuberculosis from taking care of him. And they buried her next to David Brainerd. It's hard to imagine somebody that could pack so much hardship in such a few short years as did David Brainerd. And I thought about the hardships of the Apostle Paul. And I looked at how many times Paul used the word weak or weakness. And in Paul's epistles, he talks about his weakness 32 times. He says in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, he said, "My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." That was David Brainerd. You see, we think that God's looking for the strong. He's not. He's looking for the weak. I told you that most of what we know about David Brainerd comes from his journals. David Brainerd struggled with constant sickness. I'll just read you a few things out of his journals. "Rode several hours in the rain through the howling wilderness, although I was so disordered in body that little or nothing but blood came from me. In the afternoon, my pain increased exceedingly and was obliged to betake myself to bed. I was sometimes almost bereaved of the exercise of my reason by the extremity of pain. Having lain in cold sweat all night, I coughed much bloody matter this morning and was under great disorder of body, not a little melancholy. Later on," he says, "exercise with a violent cough and a considerable fever, had no appetite to any kind of food, frequently brought up what I ate as soon as it was down, and oftentimes had little rest on my bed by reason of pains in my breast and back. Was able, however, to ride over to my people about 2 miles every day and take some care of those who were then at work upon a small house for me." And I read that, and here's what I think. I've never known sickness. I've been sick for a few days at a time. But I've never had a broken body. I've never had an incurable disease. And I thought, if I did, if I lived with a broken body, or if I lived every day where I was spitting up blood and vomiting, I wonder how much I would then care about the ministry. I wonder if my thoughts would be so consumed with somehow finding some comfort for my suffering that I would even care to preach or do anything for God. Because I know that I struggle with a healthy body. I know that I struggle with a sound mind. I wonder how much more I would struggle if I didn't have good health on my side. David Brainerd struggled with loneliness. When he was expelled from Yale, it affected him very deeply. He tried for several years to be reinstated. I think it was either Jonathan Edwards that wrote a letter to Yale College trying to help him get reinstated. And the college was probably determined to make an example out of him. Brainerd had never thought of missionary work before that. He wanted to be in the ministry, but in that day, that meant taking a comfortable position as a pastor of an established church. But that door was shut to him. Brainerd would often write about loneliness in the wilderness. He didn't have a fellowship of preachers that he would meet with once a month. His only contact was with letters. Sometimes that would take months to get back and forth. He's working with native people who are considered savages by the more sophisticated white man. And God drove him into the wilderness because that's where God wanted him. Struggled with loneliness. Brainerd struggled with physical hardships. May 1743, he says, I live poorly with regard to the comforts of life. Most of my diet consists of boiled corn and hasty pudding. I lodge on a bundle of straw, and my labor is hard and extremely difficult. 3 months later, in this weak state of mind, I was not a little distressed for want of suitable food. I had no bread, nor could I get any. I'm forced to go or send 10 or 15 miles for all the bread I eat, and sometimes it's moldy and sour before I eat it. And he's not complaining. But you read about him being lost in the woods and exposed to the cold, and he had a horse that was stolen from him, had a horse whose leg was broken. And I thought, I've never known hardship. I've never slept in the cold. I've never missed a meal because I couldn't get food. I know it's hard to compare life in 2020 to life in 1740. But I just wonder what kind of ministry I'd even be interested in if I lived a difficult life. And I'm not saying that you and I should wish for hardships, but I just wonder if I have the grace to carry a heavy cross. I wonder if all of my attention would be on the cross, or would I all of it be just trying to improve my station in life. Brainerd struggled with his calling. When you read most missionary biographies, they almost come off as superhuman and super spiritual. To be honest with you, when I read the story of William Carey, here's what I think. I can't be William Carey. I'll never do what he did. Their life, their calling, their devotion, the amount of work they did, it just seems a little bit of out of touch. I will never get to the level of an Adoniram Judson or David Livingston, but you could be David Brainerd. For one thing, David Brainerd struggled with his passion for the Indians. He says, on one time, felt some compassion for souls, mourned I had no more. I felt much more kindness, meekness, gentleness, and love towards all mankind than ever. 2 months later, though, about noon, rode up to the Indians, and while going, could feel no desire for them, and even dreaded to say anything to them. I've been there. That's me. Brainerd was deeply human. You would think that David Brainerd would welcome a call to another place. At least twice in those 2 years, another church called him and asked him to come and take the pastorate. He said no. Because though it was a life of hardship, he knew he was where God wanted him to be. He lived 29 years. 8 of those years as a believer, and only 4 of those years as a missionary. He had a good work among the Indians, but it wasn't tens of thousands of people being saved. And when he died, Jonathan Edwards took his journals and published them. He published it in the life and diary of David Brainerd. One of David Brainerd's last requests, he kept copious notes and journals. One of his last requests was that they destroy his journals. And Jonathan Edwards decided to publish them. That book was published in 1749. It's never been out of print since then. Every great missionary you've ever heard of, J. Hudson Taylor, William Carey, Robert Morrison, Robert McShane, David Livingston, Andrew Murray, John Eliot, will all tell you that their life was impacted reading the journals of David Brainerd. You can order that book out of the bookstore. This is not a commercial, but you can order that book out of the bookstore. I would tell you that it's not a novel. It's not light reading. But if you want something to challenge you deeply spiritually, you read the life and diary of Jonathan Edwards. It wasn't because he did such a monumental work. You see, to us, the man who did the most, the man who has the most converts, the man who built the largest church, that's the hero. But that was not David Brainerd. But if you want to know tonight that you can bear the hardships of life and still bring glory to God, that's David Brainerd. If you want to know what it is to live every day of your life with a burning passion for God and to care nothing for this world, that's David Brainerd. If you want to know if God can use a weak, sick, discouraged, lonely, struggling saint to accomplish great things for His glory, that is David Brainerd. It is not how many years you live. It is how you live those years. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. The invitation tonight, Anna, come. It is not for you to come and surrender your life for Christ and to tell God how much you're going to do for Him. The invitation tonight is to die. It is not to come and promise God all the things that you're going to do for Him. It's not to tell God how much you're going to live for Him. It is to offer to die. To die to worldly ambition and love of pleasure. And to die to carnal desires and sinful follies. And to die to the love of this world and the opinion of man. And I know that this is my dad's theme. But until you die to self, you'll never see God use you in your life. It is not to come and tell God how strong of a Christian that you will be. It is to come and tell God how weak that you are. Would you bow your heads with me tonight? God speaks to your hearts, you come.